This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Track on Multimedia Studios just outside Chicago, this is your double dose of Inside Open Wheel for the week. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. First and foremost, I want to thank everybody for listening to the last episode of Inside Open Wheel. It was basically the IndyCar-centered episode. We're back to more of a more normal-ish format this time around, but nonetheless... Definitely pass word along to your friends, family, coworkers, anyone who loves Open Wheel, because this next month it's going to be fantastic. Charlie Ante and I will be talking about that later on in the show. So coming up today, we're going to have Eric Brennan. He's going to wrap up the F4FRA weekend at Circuit of the Americas. FanRacing.live had all the coverage on that, as well as my friends over at the Radical Cup North America, and the SRF3 Pro Series also running. So we'll talk about that. Hopefully his voice is back to normal. The frog has vacated his throat. Also, we'll have 2020 NTT IndyCar Series Rookie of the Year, Rinus VK on. If you've followed the junior formulas, you've seen the meteoric rise of Rinus. And we're going to talk about that and how his family got involved with motorsports as early as 10 years ago, at least stateside. I believe that further on, but we'll talk more about that with Rinus. And as always, we'll have Charlie Ante talking about more of the news. We've had more news developed since our last episode that dropped on Monday. So for those of you new to the show, you can follow us on Twitter at Inside Open Wheel, like us on Facebook, just search for Inside Open Wheel. Leave us a voicemail, 815-714-9260 for any questions Charlie and I can answer or our future guests, and also InsideOpenWheel@gmail.com is a great place to drop us a line. So without further ado, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up next, Eric Brennan of FanRacing.live joining us, wrapping up the final weekend of F4 FR America's action at the Circuit of the Americas on Inside Open Wheel. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, it's another season-ending weekend for another one of the series we follow. Two of them ended up wrapping up at the Circuit of the Americas and what was due to be the U.S. Grand Prix weekend. And joining me after having found his voice sometime within the 14 hours that he announced multiple races is Eric Brennan from FanRacing.live. Eric, I've got to say, I've never been to COTA. It's always been on my bucket list of tracks, and everybody keeps saying you need to go. Even though this was what we consider a quote-unquote support series race, what are your first thoughts on that circuit in Austin?
I'll tell you. First of all, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the couple days to have the ice packs on the vocal cords a little bit because it was a rough one. But when we were driving down the main highway that leads off to the racetrack on the left-hand side, and you see that huge, you know, that red and white observation tower, it flashed me back to the first time I went to Daytona, or even, you know, like first time going to Disney World as a kid. Like it's so breathtaking. All the design, style, and engineering that went into making that place what it is. And I mean, you know, it was awkward to be there with not a lot of pedestrian traffic, because anytime I've seen it on television or on film, that's, you know, that place is usually jam packed with people. And I mean, we all wish it was, of course, but as a facility, state of the art. Top to bottom, from, you know, entryway to the staff that was there, you know, even though, you know, there weren't any fans, the staff was still A+ material that they provided for us. And you could actually see the approach to turn one from the roadway, and you could tell that is not really natural terrain, that, you know, that huge uphill incline that leads to that sharp left-hander at turn number one. You could see how much work they put into building that and the surrounding area to kind of flow with the property line. And it's just breathtaking. It's the only word I could use to describe it. It's a must go to for any race fan, especially an open wheel racing fan.
Did you get a couple seconds to go up to that tower in the carousel?
So here's the funny thing. Apparently the elevator was broken. So the people that were going up there deserve the award of the week, because that means that they were going up there the hard way. And I mean, I could use my steps every now and then, but I don't necessarily know I was equipped for that one.
That, oh my God, that sounds like the ice cream machine at a McDonald's. Sounds like it's always broken. Because I had a buddy of mine who's a spotter, and one of the sports car series that was out there this year, the elevator's broken again. So it's like, okay, that's kind of normal. But regardless, nonetheless, it was an interesting weekend because one of the storylines we were following going into the weekend was, would Hunter Yaney be in F4? We talked with Gustavo Yakimin. He sounded like that the series was pushing him to stay in F4 so that way he can get a fresh start in FR Americas for next season. It was it going to happen? Wasn't it going to happen? We found out a couple days before from the VRD team that he wasn't going to run in F4, but the press release, I don't think, was saying whether or not he was going to run in FR Americas.
Yeah, even for me, I didn't get notification up until I got to the track on Friday morning. It was a story that I was trying to chase down through my sources as well. And I understand that there was a bit of an approval process and we needed a number of people to say yes and check the boxes and get them in line. And I will tell you, one of the things that I got to say on air is from people who talk to Hunter, and this is what I admire about this kid, is, I believe it was Craig Minervini who said to him, why do you want to get in FR so bad? Like, don't you want to, especially because Craig brought up the point that if he would have went to COTA and captured two wins, he would have broken the win record in a single season in F4. So, he had something to chase if he decided to stay behind and try to finish out the season on a high note in F4. But he said that he really wanted to share track time with Linus Lundqvist before he moves on, because by virtue of him winning the championship, and as you've covered many times, he's on Indy Lights next year, so he's not going to have that opportunity. And he didn't say it in a vengeful or demeaning way, like I want to go out there and beat that guy. I want to go out there and race that guy. And I think it's because even at a very young age that Hunter is at, he's aware that he could learn a lot from Linus before that opportunity slips away and they have to find each other somewhere further up the ladder. And I admire that about him. So when we rolled in and we saw them there Friday, I guess, however the deal was done, it was real fitting to see him out on track, running in close proximity to Linus in practice. And if you're actually able to go back and pull up the practice results from Friday, he was right there with him. I mean, he was fast. And I think the temperature change caught a lot of us off guard, including the teams, and it really burned him in qualifying and set him behind once they got to race one. And we never got to see those two in wheel-to-wheel combat under race conditions. But nevertheless, I'm happy he got the chance to be out there. I'm happy that, everybody from the top to bottom, whether it be the representatives of the FIA or the Sports Car Club of America and VRD as well, because they still had two F4 teams in the mix. So they had to shift some resources to prepare a car, which they've only put on track a couple of times this year up to COTA. It paid off. It gave us a really good talking point, and I think it gave him a bit of a confidence boost heading into 2021.
Yeah, that was interesting to watch those practice sessions. We'll talk about FR Americas in just a little bit. I want to touch on F4. So since Hunter Yaney wasn't in F4, it was all of a sudden a toss-up on who would be up near the front. Jose Blanco's been good. Spike Kohlbecker's been good. Tavella hasn't been too bad. It was just pick a name out of a hat, and that was the driver that you were probably going to pick for the win this weekend.
Yeah, and I really feel like that, I almost feel for Jose Blanco because he's one of the few people in the series who did not have a rookie tag on him. So, you would think that if you're handicapped in the field, that somebody like him or Dylan Tavella, who have a year under their belt already, would have been penciled in as a favorite to win the championship. And I don't know what happened at Barber, but he just kind of, it took him a little bit to get, to get in the groove. Really, VIR was tough on him. He got caught up in a big accident there, got to Barber, and he was able to finally, grab a win in that four-race stretch. But it wasn't until that he kind of got to Sebring and was able to just start clicking off results. And if he didn't get caught up in any type of trouble, he was normally up there racing with Hunter for the lead and the win. Actually happened the last race at Homestead when they actually ended up tangling a little bit before that. He still came back and finished second. So once the word came out and once we realized that Hunter was going to move on up, I think we all kind of shifted Jose Blanco into that prime position to take advantage. Plus, he was still vying to cement second place in the championship points. And even though he had the edge coming into the weekend, it was still a mission that he needed to accomplish. So it was nice to see, especially after he got his second win at Homestead, where he was a little bit dejected once it became a realization that the championship was no longer obtainable. he was a little bit down about it. It was nice to see him end the year on such a high note. Also really helped in gaining the team championship for CrossLink QB Motorsports. He obviously played a huge role in that, as did Spike Kolbecker. And, you know, they both split. You know, Jose got a couple wins on the weekend. Spike, of course, got the other. And I'll tell you, Spike is just such a really cool kid out of St. Louis. He's I actually ran into him at the awards banquet, and he was dressed pretty nice. I said, "Hey, Spike, like, you know, did I underdress? Did you overdress?" And he laughed. He said, "I got a date with me tonight. I got to make sure I look good." I'm like, this kid's got it. He's got it figured out. And he's got confidence on his side. He's got a couple of big wins under his belt already. And I'm right now, 2021 is kind of a question mark for a lot of people. I really hope we get to see those two come back. Because I think they both have unfinished business, and they're both very capable of getting the job done. And, you know, before I wrap up this point, you mentioned Dylan Tavell as well. Man, it's just once the bad luck got him, it's almost like the mistakes kind of multiplied. That kid's got talent. He's mm-hmm. got talent. He's got raw speed. He's got what it takes. He comes from a part of the world that I'm familiar with up in, you know, Long Island, New York, where you don't really get a lot of open wheel racing talent. I mean, of course, you think of Andy Lally, but you don't think open wheel when you think of Andy Lally. You think of the sports car presence that he has. But, you know, Long Island, New York is not really a hotbed for open wheel stars. And Dylan has found a way to, you know, get into this position for us to have frequent conversations about him being quick. He showed flashes of brilliance. He got taken out early in one of the races at COTA while running in the top three. I just think he needs a clean slate. I think that if they could regroup, get himself a little bit clear-minded of the up and down year that he had, where he still ended up in the top four in points, I really think he can come out guns ablaze in 2021 if that's what him, his team, and his partners elect to do next year.
Top five in points. Hunter Yaney wins it with 285 points. Jose Blanco, 228. Spike Kolbecker, third with 203. Fourth, Dylan Tavella, 201. Kane McKee with 117 points. And yeah, you saw it all year with Yaney, Blanco, Kolbecker, and Tavella. This will be something we'll talk more about later on the next month in our big F4 FR Americas wrap up. But, you know, the thing that really, I think part of the reason why I think, other than the Linus Lundqvist wanting to run with him, I think the reason why Hunter Yaney also probably stepped aside is, he didn't really have to continue the streak of winning every other race after losing the positions that he did at Homestead after taking on Jose Blanco.
Yeah, and you know, we mentioned that he could have went after that, you know, single season win record like Linus was able to tie in FR. But yeah, I think that would have been a cool feather in the cap to say that he wanted every stop that the series had been on. And then, yeah, after the penalty with Blanco, he still ended up on a podium, you know, due to the 5-second penalty they issued. It still kept him in the top three. But it gave him one less thing to chase. But I really think that he wanted an opportunity to share some track time with Linus. And it opened the door for a couple of new names to get up there. I will tell you, probably, you know, a bit of a random thought, one of the most impressive drivers that I saw, ironically also from Sweden in F4, was Victor Andersson.
Yep.
Who also was driving for CrossLink QB Motorsport. Really, like, they actually split the F4 practice sessions on Friday. They have a group A and a group B. He was fastest in his respective group in the practice session. The lap time was good enough to also put him up in the top two or three in the other group that was on track. And then he had a good run in qualifying in the race one. Either something broke, he plummeted to the back of the field, didn't get him a chance to lay down a quick lap time to get a good starting spot in race two. Race three started up in the top five, ran well pretty much all throughout. I think if that is one of those plans and agendas where they're just trying to size things up for what their approach is for 2021, he's going to be a guy to watch. That was the biggest takeaway that I took out of this weekend as far as what to look for going forward. Victor Andersson is a name that I think we're going to be talking about a lot next year.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of drivers that came into this year, whether it be later or just start coming onto their own this year, especially in the rookie class. There's an impressive rookie class, I think. You know, Nick Persing, Sarche, Kolbecker, Kane McKee, Eric Evans, they all looked really good. And I think that if things pan out and everybody stays where they're at, we're set for another great F4 season, because the best races I saw, and that's not counting, you know, not knocking FR Americas, but the best races I always saw of the weekend were in F4.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, a lot of that, and look at the participation. I mean, this was a crazy year. And, you know, I really want to thank the SECA for giving me a chance to, you know, work with, well, the SECA and Obi Johnson of FanRacing.live. They gave us a chance to kind of open up the awards banquet because we live streamed it that night. And we wanted to welcome the audience. We also wanted to address the room. And I also, I did want to bring up the fact that no matter where your results fared, this was probably one of the hardest years for anybody on a personal level, professional level, business level. And when you look at how sustainable the car count was all throughout the year, we started with 33 at Mid-Ohio. We ended with 21 at Circuit of the Americas. And in between, we were always in about the 24 to 26 range, similar to what you would see in an IndyCar field. And that's with the challenging times. That's with, you know, everybody at Leger, Hankook, and Honda making sure that they were prepared to be able to handle that level of car count in such a difficult time. And everybody got it done. And I think that that speaks volumes for the strength of the series as a whole and the importance of it. But the other item that I want to reference is, you know, I definitely want to be sure that we do see some of these drivers and teams coming back, because the rookie class being as high as it is, and I believe it was close to 80% that Scott Goodyear had said when he filled out the entry blanks of Mid-Ohio, I'd like to see some of them return a couple times. I hate to see the one and dones, you know, like they talk about in college basketball. I think it would bode well for a lot of these people to come on back, even if they feel that they have the support and the funding and they've garnered enough experience. I think we would all benefit by seeing some of those names that you mentioned come on back next year. And, you know, hopefully we'll start to see some of those news and information trickle out as far as what people's plans are for next year relatively soon.
Well, we have at least one driver that we may think will show up in F4. We'll talk more about that here in just a little bit. Also put a bow on the FR America side of things for next season. Next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, there were two different racing series racing at COTA that we normally watch, so we're on the second half of the COTA weekend. Jeremy Scott alongside Eric Brennan, fanracing.live, and we already know that Linus Lundqvist wrapped up the FR Americas title, but we talked a little bit about it earlier on. Hunter Yaney came into the weekend going into FR Americas. And yeah, I will admit, I did watch the practice sessions on Race Monitor on Friday because why the heck not? It was impressive to see Hunter up near the front. Session one, he was 0.1 seconds behind Linus Lundqvist, if I remember correctly. He was quick. And then at the last second, Linus took that fast lap. But in the second practice, there was no one catching Hunter Yaney. He was 0.3 seconds ahead of Victor Franzoni in that first practice session. And I thought, okay, this is going to be interesting, you know, to see four drivers up for the mix for the lead. But as you said, the weather just caught everybody out.
Yeah, and I got to catch up with Dan Mitchell, who is pretty much the team leader over at Velocity Racing Development. I said to him, you know, yeah, and of course, he was at the awards banquet, so they were all in a good mood, emotions very high. But as soon as I brought up, you know, what happened? You guys were so good off the truck. You get to the point where the times matter a little bit more in qualifying. And he took full responsibility. He said, you know, we let him down. He's like, we missed a couple things, and, you know, we just weren't prepared. And it seemed as though the weather was the common denominator. The forecast a week prior to us getting there was showing it to be in the 90s and sunny, so I was looking forward to one last opportunity to get a little bit of a tan, but as soon as we got there on Friday, it was just miserable, cold, and cloudy, sometimes misty at certain points, and it kind of stayed that way all day Saturday, and then Sunday, it finally, unfortunately, warmed up a little bit, and I think that swung some of the competitive angles throughout the weekend, but I think that's all it took. Now, I will give credit where credit is due. Once he got himself, you know, kind of nestled in and they kind of figured out some of the handling characteristics of that car, he proved that it could be a top five vehicle, ended the weekend fourth, just missing out on the podium, thought he had a chance to get it after a full course yellow late in the last race of the year. But right, I mean, what more can you say? You know, we talk about how strong the FR field was this year with the Indy Lights transplants coming over, with Linus Lundqvist being so dominant. And then Hunter Yaney comes off the truck and in that second practice session just smokes him. I mean, if anybody's looking for a little bit of evidence as to how legitimate this kid's talent really is, I think that's the best piece of judging equipment that you could use to make such a case. The kid's good, and he's certainly fun to watch.
Yeah, Linus Lundqvist will be on our Champions Edition for SCCA Pro next week on Inside Open Wheel. We're waiting on the champions of the Formula Race promotions. I believe Simon Sykes might be the one closing that out because his main competition is over in Europe for the Formula Ford Festival. But back to what we were talking about with the Indy Lights transplants, I did get a little bit of clarification from HMD Motorsports They told me today that they're working on a few different programs, but Indy Lights will be the series of choice for 2021. But they're not leaving out the possibility that they'll be back in FRA next year, which I hope they are, because they were a pretty good force coming out from the word go.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, they also had a really like mixed bag of tricks throughout the year that they would end up dealing with as far as drivers and talent. And I mean, started off in Mid-Ohio with two drivers who got bit by the cancellation of the Indy Lights season. David Malukas, the obvious one, and Santiago Urrutia, who was doing very well until he had a mistake in race one, podium to race two. And then we didn't see Santiago for the rest of the year. Then they pick up Logan Cusson mid-season. So we had Malukas by himself, pretty much the lone rider for that organization for a couple of races. And Cusson comes in and he's able to get his best career FRA finish, you know, midway through the season. And then they, you know, picked up a couple of other drivers. Next thing you know, they're up to four cars that they're operating out under. And at the awards banquet, when they were accepting, you know, their runner-up finish in the team championship standings, you know, largely in thanks to the incredible run that Malukas had. You know, we talk about Lundqvist winning 15 of 17, Malukas podium 15 of 17. So that too is something for him and that organization to be proud of. And they hinted that they may be coming back. They didn't say with who. They didn't say what the plan was. They did highlight the fact their partnership with Malukas will continue on. They just didn't specify exactly what series. I think, you know, prior to the information you were able to share, I think we all assumed he was going to end up back over to Indy Lights. But I'm happy that you were able to cement that as a fact. But they've got some talent behind them, you know, and I'd like to see Logan Cusson come back because, you know, once he got acclimated with the team, he started to put up some good results. And I've never seen somebody so humble to have a third place finish like Cusson did when he got his first career podium back at Homestead. So I hope they'll be back. They certainly elevate the paddock as a whole. They certainly gave Global Racing Group a run for their money in some sense. You know, obviously, you know, outside of the results from Linus, you know, they were right there with everybody else and the leader or the best of the rest, we should probably say. And I think it would be good to have them back in the FR paddock next year, and hopefully they can make that happen.
I like, you know, another driver I'd like to see there was Marco Casa, got his first point in his first weekend in FR this season. Seems like that he would be a driver that would be up near the front. The rookie class was impressive as well, but that unfortunately is, I don't think we're going to see as many of the rookies come back, because I think a lot of them were drivers who were, you know, like a Malukas, a Victor Franzoni, who had their sights set on Indy Lights, but because of the cancellation, they decided to come play in FR Americas.
Yeah, and I mean, we had Kippen Simpson as a late addition to the FR field this season. You know, Hunter Yaney, it appears that's what his plan is. I'm curious as to how many more drivers who carried a rookie banner, per se, in the F4 or may elect to kind of move on over. Or, you know, perhaps there'll be a little bit of a Linus Lundqvist effect here. You know, Linus, you know, made it, and sometimes he may have made it a little bit difficult for some people to watch because he would stink up the show by running so good. But he put a lot of eyes on the series because he got a lot of people talking, not just in Indianapolis, but around the world, about the FR America season, which was newly rebranded this year. I think it's garnered a little bit more attention. So maybe it will turn into a place of opportunity and we will see some more names on there, because I'm with you. I do think that we are going to lose some of the names once the Indy Lights opportunities open back up. That is, if there is enough seats at the table for those drivers to go over there. I know that, you know, prior to the cancellation, we weren't sure how many Indy Lights cars were going to be on the grid in 2020. Yep. And it seems like that may be a bit of a speculatory thought going into 2021 as well. But it seems like a good backup. I mean, then, you know, as a sport in a series that I cover frequently, I don't want to refer to it as a backup plan for Indy Lights, but it turned into that and it worked out. It seemed like for the most part, everybody enjoyed being a part of it. And, you know, we'll see if that level of talent continues to kind of transition at a level playing field or a level point, even with the Indy Lights coming back next year. And I hope so, because we were privy to some great racing, and I expect that to continue next year.
I would almost like to see a situation like we saw in CART with SEC, when SECA hit sanctioning of the Atlantics, and they ran a couple races with CART. Ideally, I'd like to see that with FR Americas. Obviously, we don't have the schedule out yet. We're not going to speculate on that. We'll worry about that a little bit down the road, but that would be smart money to see some FR Americas guys race on the same track that these IndyCar drivers and the Indy Lights and the Road to Indy are on. I don't think it's as taboo of a suggestion as it was 5-10 years ago, but personally, I think this would be a great step in the right direction for, you know, FR Americas, where okay, you know what? The table's full in Indy Lights. Let's go run FR Americas. We still get the same eyes on us, the same, you know, couple weekends out of the year, you know, maybe an F1 race or two throughout the season. Could happen.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you, you know, 100%. And the biggest thing about the rebranding that they did for this year, which, you know, obviously because of COVID, it didn't get to come in the frame. But, you know, Formula Regional Americas, there is a Mexican F4 championship that has a lot of strength. And, you know, I guess when we thought that maybe things would have been better by the time, you know, late October rolled around, there was hope that they would have been added to the schedule at COTA. But because, you know, logistically it just couldn't happen, we didn't get to see it come in the fray. But the idea when they put that together was to have an FR race up north in Canada and potentially also down south. Truly an American regional series, not just an American series. So it'll work for, you know, all three of the countries that do often breed a lot of good talent. And they're not forced to just come down and only have to run in the States in order to make a name for themselves. So long term, and considering the fact that we are seeing, you know, the IndyCars had an international flair for it for a very long time. The Lights had international flair for it for a very long time. And it's time for American talent is getting a little bit more clear or easier to transition through, which, you know, think back about 15, 20 years ago, that wasn't the case. So we've got a good format and a good formula. And I think that between the two of them, it could balance out rather properly. And that's all we want to see. We want to see good racing. We want to see the right names in the right seats. And we want to see talent find a way to the top. And I think that between both options, whether it be Road to Indy or the SCCA platforms, it's there. So I would love to see them somehow cooperate in some sense, you know, down the road, or even, as you said, just compete at similar venues or the same venues at some point. And I mean, who knows? I mean, we're seeing racing series come together like we never have before. Maybe we'll see that too, because I think it would be a win for everybody.
Yeah, it would be a great win for everybody. So moving on to the future, before we get on to our full wrap up later on next month, British driver Emily Linscott, she's raced here in the States with Lucas Oil Racing School. She's raced in British Formula Ford. She is in a seat fitting with Kiwi Motorsports for the F4 championship test. I wouldn't be surprised if we see her up near the front. And what helps is her driver coach is none other than Indy 500 starter Pippa Mann.
I think that would be great. And honestly, I think that's the one thing that we were really missing on the F4 calendar in 2020 was a top female prospect. I was very happy to see when Carter Annie Rule signed a driver development deal with Alliance Racing, or many of you may know them as the Gas Monkey team, yep, who ironically also has an Indy representative behind him, and Alonzo Jr., who late in the season came on board to kind of help them. And, you know, Annie's also still being involved in karting and whatnot, but we talk about how much talent is up and coming. I think that's something else that this series could bode well from. Is, you know, a really good, talented, well-rounded, morally sound female talent who can come into the sport and put up numbers and compete with these guys. And I've not had a chance to see Emily race. I've heard the name before. I've not seen it yet from my own eyes, but I have watched Annie Rule for a number of years, whether it be karting events or, you know, some of her test days that she's able to share, and also had a chance to talk to her for a while. And she's just a go-get-em type of personality. And I think the series, from not just from a marketing perspective, but just, you know, storyline perspective, and also just because of, you know, where I think, you know, those two could land one day, it would be great to see. And I hope 2021 is the year to make all that happen.
Yeah, I'm hoping that a lot of drivers and teams and sponsors come out next year, because really F4 and FR Americas, that right there is the stepping stone to where, if you don't necessarily want to, or you can't get to the Road to Indy, head over to F4, FR Americas. You're going to get the same amount of competition that you see over with IndyCar.
Oh, yeah. And I think that this year kind of proved it. And, you know, we were talking in our post-production meeting when we wrapped things up. You know, we thought all the way back to Mid-Ohio when things first got off the ground, the story was the Indy Lights guys. They were going to be the guys to beat. And then we all were just shocked by the performance of this young hotshot from Sweden and Linus Lundqvist. And I think that tells the tale of FR Americas. You know, you may think that you know who the guys to beat are, but until we get them all on the racetrack with this style of Ligier F3 body, you know, F3 chassis car, that's when we're going to start to see some answers and some results. And it's an opportunity for you to make a name for yourself. And I told you before we went on air, if you look at the box score, and obviously Linus tied Kyle Kirkwood's record with 15 wins in 17 races. So he'll be remembered in the record books for that. He'll be remembered in the record books for being the 2020 FR champion. But the thing that I took away from him, and I told him afterwards, his speech at the awards banquet was really one of the most genuine bits of emotion I've ever seen out of a race car driver. And it wasn't filled with emotion. It wasn't filled with tears. It was just, he wasn't reading. It wasn't like he memorized. He was reading the room. It was as if he was talking to everyone individually. He knew every one of his sponsors. He knew every one of his teammates. He knew almost everybody on his team off the top of his head, as if it was just a normal conversation. He just gets it. And I really cannot thank the SECA and the former the Regional Americas and the Global Racing Group for giving this guy a stage to make a name for himself, because he's done just that. And I am so, shouldn't be biased, but I'm so rooting for his success, because he deserves it after all he had to go through to make this year happen. And he's just got the whole package. He's got it all. And I'm excited to see what happens in the Indy Lights next year.
Here's the fun part. We get to see Kirkwood and Lundqvist go toe-to-toe next year.
That was something that John Fifthen said in the awards banquet. He said, I'm sad to see 2020 go, but I'm excited to see 2021, not just for us, but just for what Indy Lights is going to provide, because that's going to be the story there, at least for us, on this side of the fence who followed him get up there. But that's really going to be fun to see.
Eric, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. So we'll get everybody together and ramp up the entire F4 FRA championship.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy. Appreciate it as always.
Coming up next is our 2020 NTT IndyCar Series Rookie of the Year, Rinus VK, on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, we are privileged and proud to have this year's NTT IndyCar Series Rookie of the Year. He's a driver who has had, shall we say, a fantastic weekend. All he had to do was just start the engine and take the green flag and win the award. And, oh, by the way, he also signed an extension with his team at Carpenter Racing. It's Rinus VK. Rinus, thanks for taking time. I know you're a little busy with a lot of the IndyCar media, but great to have you on board today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a great season, clinching the Rookie of the Year awards, and I'm very looking forward to staying with ECR for the 2021 season.
Yeah, it's a great partnership that you and Ed Carpenter have. We'll talk a little bit about that later on. But I've got to say this, watching you come up through the ranks from USF 2000 to today, really seeing you up in IndyCar was a given, especially watching you in, I remember the first time I saw you on track was at Toronto in USF 2000. And really, you're running with Pabst Racing, which at the time was, well, still is a front-running team, but you still had the wherewithal of being that racer that can get up to the front.
Yeah. Of course, I've had a great career so far throughout the whole road to Indy. And I feel comfortable racing everyone hard. And I really enjoy also this year driving in the IndyCar and fighting it out with all the veterans.
It's been an odd season, as you know, because of the pandemic. But the first race, in my opinion, you're thrown out to the wolves, racing at Texas Motor Speedway. What was that like going into that race on a track where you've never, I mean, the only time you stepped foot on there was for a test?
Yeah. So starting the season at Texas Motor Speedway was tough. I finally done half a day of testing there because it was so cold. Mm-hmm. That was tough start of the season. Of course, I had two crashes in one weekend, but it was a big lesson for me. And I changed as a driver, and I'm, a whole different person right now. Also because of that mistake.
I was going to say, and what was it like going into the transporter afterwards and talking to Ed Carpenter after that first race? It had to be probably one of the toughest conversations of your career.
Yeah, that was tough. I expected Ed not to be very happy, so I braced myself. But, I got some tough words from Ed. He was not really pleased with it, but I kind of made it up by not making those mistakes again. Mm. And my second start in IndyCar was a month later, and I finished fifth there, so it was really hard to get back in that way.
Yeah, that's a track where you came out and said after you won that pole at the Hurst Grand Prix that, you know, the road course in Indy is my favorite road course. You finished fifth in that one. And looking across your history at the road course at Indianapolis, you do quite well there.
Yes. I've had a lot of races there this year, too. But, the results were great. Also, you know, it's the home race for the team. And it's great to give them that reward, you know. Closer home, and finally getting that pole position on the road course and the first podium this season.
And you also, you had the first podium there at the Harvest GP. You ran at Indy for the first time in an Indy car. You finished 20th, so pretty respectable for a rookie to come on and you know, do quite well there at the 500. And Gateway, another, you know, your first oval outside of Indy, you know, Gateway, you finished in the top 10 twice. What is it about Gateway that you're able to just, you know, take to?
Yeah, I like that track. And we had a good strategy. The strategies really helped. And of course, you got to be quick still, but I like the track. I made some good passes there around the outside of the restarts, but yeah, I love the track. I've been successful there in the Euro 22, so I was very happy to come there for and to do a hot doubleheader. So, looking forward to going there again next year.
That's a fantastic facility out there in Madison, Illinois. But I do one thing that I looked at when I was looking at your when I was doing some research. It's interesting to note that you have finished no lower than second in the championship amongst all, you know, like the USF 2000 Pro Mods and Indy Lights. And the only time you finished second was when your Rookie of the Year compatriot, Oliver Askew, won the title. So you two kind of been fighting tooth and nail throughout your road to Indy careers.
Yes, yes. The road to Indy was very, very nice to me. And I had good fights with Oliver, even in go-karts before the road to Indy. We were already, battling it out on track and then throughout the whole road to Indy, we were always kind of matching up to each other. We were always setting each other's benchmarks. So it was a good time, and it's nice to see Oliver being successful in IndyCar, and I hope he lands the rides for next year.
Now, also, anytime you've gotten in a single-seater car, for the most part, it looks like you've done quite well. You won a championship this past year in the F3 Asian Winter Series with Dragon High Tech GP. You finished second in the Boss GP Open Class with Mansell Motorsport, fifth there in 2018. So, open wheel, I mean, you do quite well. What is it with any seat you get in, you seem to find success?
Yeah, I just enjoy the racing, and it seems like, I've driven in many different cars, many different open wheel cars, but the faster the car is, the better, the faster I go, actually. So, the more comfortable I feel. So that's a good thing to have, and I'm very happy. Very happy that I can show that in the car.
Rinus VK joins us on Inside Open Wheel. He is your 2020 NTT IndyCar Series Rookie of the Year. You're going into your fifth season here in the United States. What is it about North American racing that sets it apart from racing in Europe or racing in Asia?
You got ovals, you got street courses, you got road courses. It's super diverse, and also everyone's just super, super fast, and the level is very high in IndyCar. So, I think it's the best open wheel series in the world. And there's just so much action. You have to drive so fast. You're so close to failing. But it's always such adrenaline you get from driving those IndyCars. So I really enjoy, and I think, it's really, really the best thing I could do to make the step towards America.
Now, when you were growing up in the Netherlands, did you expect that you were going to have a stay in IndyCar, because the Lion Dyke name obviously very popular in the Netherlands, at, you know, with winning two Indy 500s, or did you think that you're going to take the, you know, the path of maybe Max Verstappen and end up in Formula One someday?
Well, of course, as a little kid, you always look at F1 because that's way close to the Netherlands, and then yeah, I got introduced to IndyCar and I was in love immediately, and I knew what my goals were and what my dreams were, what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And of course, well, there's a whole road you got to complete before you can do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I made it, and well, I'm really enjoying every day.
And on the note of Ari Lion Dyke, how has that been having, you know, obviously he's a race steward, but how has that been having him to lean on every weekend, you know, and ask, okay, what do I do for this, or, you know, different scenarios?
Yeah, it's great to have Ari there. Of course, he's working for IndyCar, but he gives me a lot of tips, and most things he helps me with is making sure I know all the rules so I don't make a silly mistake because I simply didn't know it.
And I've got to say, the two tribute helmets you've done for Ari, they've been phenomenal. What was your thought process going into those and designing two separate helmets? You know, one that was like his, another one that was like his famous Dutch boy paint scheme in 1990. What was that? What was the thought process behind celebrating his career?
Well, of course, Ari has been super successful, and my goal is to be even as successful as he has been in his IndyCar career. So he's really a hero for me, and it's a dream come true to work with him. And yeah, just that helmet, the tribute helmet that is for the 500, was pretty cool. I just came up with that. I thought it was a nice tribute after 30 years after his first win. And then last race, yeah. It actually started as a joke to make that helmet. And then, well, I was driving with a Dutch boy helmet, so that was pretty cool.
Let's talk about next year's schedule, looking into 2021. You start, you know, you have your first two ovals are both at Texas Motor Speedway. How are you going to go in there and kind of redeem yourself? I know that, you know, having the PJ1 surface on the track is going to make it just as tough as it was last year, but are you going to go in with a different mindset of, you know, just try and at least survive race one and see what happens race two?
Well, I think, yeah, I go into the race with a different mindset, but I've learned a lot in the last season, so I'm not really worried about that. And I'm really looking forward to that race just for some redemption.
What's it like been having Ed Carpenter on the timing stand for the road courses and, you know, after the oval sessions, you know, talking to him, being a wealth of knowledge that's been around the sport his whole life?
Yeah, it's great to have Ed Carpenter there, and he gives me a lot of tips, but it's also nice to, yeah, just make sure his team is successful. Of course, it really pays off if you do well. So, yeah, it's great to drive for Ed Carpenter Racing. Very nice team boss and teammate. And I cannot wait to stay with him for another year.
And then having Connor Daly alongside you in the road courses, that has to also help as well, comparing notes with somebody who's been around the international circuits.
Yeah, Connor is a great guy, and he really wants to help me, and we're always kind of helping each other with trying to make the team better. So it's very nice to have shared a track with him, and yeah, let's hope he can be in the 20 car again next year.
All right, Thursday is the virtual award ceremony hosted by James Hinchcliffe. How excited are you to be a part of something like that? Obviously it's not the usual ceremony we see, but there's got to be something that you're going to be doing special in preparation for this ceremony.
Yeah, it's great to be there. I'm not really sure what's gonna happen there, but yeah, it's great to be part of that. And yeah, great to be a Rookie of the Year. So I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, let's make sure the virtual banquet will be nice for everyone.
All right. So how can fans follow you on social media? Obviously, you know, beyond the ceremony and throughout the offseason, to follow up how you're progressing to get ready for the second half of the doubleheader at St. Pete.
Well, just search Rena CK on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, and I'm going to be right there. Well, I'm pretty busy with all the social media to make it as convenient as possible. So, yeah, it will be nice content, and also during the offseason, we will not be standing still.
Well, sounds good, Renus. Thanks for joining us once again. Congratulations on your Rookie of the Year title, and can't wait to see what you can do next season.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Charlie Ante and I talk about the news of the week.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, it's one of those weeks where there's a lot going on, and we have two episodes thanks to IndyCar, but Charlie Ante joins me once again. I've got to say, from the past 48 hours since we released this, the first show, there have been a lot of news that have come out, and it's mostly on the IndyCar side. What helps us, though, is the fact that it's all based upon driver swaps, and I think it's only going to get louder as the weeks continue.
Yeah, I mean, it's October, so we're well into silly season at this point.
We'll talk about the news that has broken earlier today. Dragon Speed has shut their IndyCar program, so no Ben Hanley, no Dragon Speed. They did say that they did list the pandemic as the issue, but they did say that they will be back eventually. The good news is that 81 car has been sold to Meyershank Racing, so that kind of means that they will have a second car. The Grand Am Pierce hopes that they end up getting the 6 car, that way they can return to the 6 and the 60, but that's going to be interesting to see who ends up in that seat next year and pairs with Jack Harvey.
Yeah. I mean, I think before we aired, you riddle off a list of names that Ganassi might pick up. And so I think it'll be interesting to see if anybody that doesn't get that right sort of slides over.
Yeah. So here's the story. We've been following this. Who's going to be in the 10 seat? It sounds more and more like Felix Rosenquist will not be in the 10 car next year. From what I'm understanding, NTT Data does not want to put money towards a full season ride. Understandable. They are the series sponsor. We do appreciate all their efforts, but there are a lot of different names that are being floated around. One of them is, the latest one I've heard is Alex Palou going from Coyne all the way over to Ganassi. Last driver that did that was Ed Jones, and we know how well that worked out. Another one that's being floated is his teammate, Santino Ferrucci. Now, what Santino Ferrucci can bring to the Ganassi stable, still a little bit unclear. But the big surprise for me, especially since this driver signed a long-term contract with this team, is 2016 Indy 500 winner Alexander Rossi.
Yeah, I think it wasn't that long ago that he was pretty much saying that he's staying with Andretti for a while, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the guy's had a bad. I mean, he's had one bad season. Okay, so chalk it up to, well, you know what, stuff happens. You know, I can't see him leaving that ride. You know, he's a hell of an ambassador for both AutoNation and NAPA, and I mean, it was an off year for him. I you know, a lot of these guys.
Yeah, and I don't think his bad season was due to poor performance either by him or the car. I think it was just a lot of bad luck.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. He had a ton of bad luck. Especially, you know, you take a look at what happened to him in turn 3 during the race.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't, if you jumped teams every time you had a season full of bad luck, then, I mean, that's not a good way to run your career.
No, and Rossi's smarter than that. So I think that rumor was from a certain Was it the AP writer I was thinking of? Let me give me a couple seconds. While we're on the Ganassi side of things, Marcus Ericsson did sign a multi-year extension with Ganassi. He's been one that I'm not surprised has done as well as he has. We saw those flashes of brilliance last year with when he was with, at the time, Schmidt Peterson. And look at what he's been doing alongside Scott Dixon.
Yeah, where did he finish in the championship?
Oh, give me a second. Actually, our favorite AP rider was the one who floated the Polo to the 10 car. I can't remember who floated the Alexander Rossi, but regardless, give me a second.
Polo sounds much more plausible than Rossi for sure.
Yeah, but I can't see Polo going over to. Going over to Ganassi, because like I said, that just has a Ed Jones feel to it. Okay, so 3, 6, 9. So he finished 12th in the championship, 291 points, and he was about a couple points behind his teammate Felix Rosenqvist. Now, the whole thing that puzzles me about Rosenqvist, the guy got his first win with Ganassi. He's knocked on the door a couple times. He's had a couple of bad lucks, and it sounds to me like it's not a term of Ganassi showing him the door. It's he's looking for other opportunities, which I think is, it's strange. Why would you go? It's like saying you're gonna, you know, leave the Boston Red Sox and go to, you know, the Florida Marlins for an opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the door is open at Ganassi, you stay there.
Yeah.
I don't know where he's gonna get a better ride other than maybe going to Penske.
Well, the rumor that is floating around is that he's going to Errol McLaren Schmidt Peterson. That's the rumor. But his agent, who is the same agent as Ericsson's, the same agent as Dixon's, is Stefan Johansson. And he said, yeah, no, there's nothing to talk about right now. So. And the way Dixon was talking to IndyCar Radio was, yeah, I hope he stays around. So maybe there's a chance that Rosenqvist stays in the 10 car. I'd like to see him in the 10 car because that would be a potent 1-2-3 of Rosenqvist, Dixon, Rosenqvist, and Ericsson.
Yeah, I would think so for sure. I mean, we've said through this season that Rosenqvist is has a lot of potential. He just has to get a few things ironed out, and he's going to be a solid front runner. I think that's still the case as long as he stays in a good car.
No, I'm disagreeing. I think another silly season that we're going to watch out for is that who's going to be in the 28 car. Will it remain Ryan Hunter Ray? Will Santino Ferrucci go over there, though? I've heard that he said that he told Andretti, no, I know Ferrucci wants to stay at Coyne. He said that before. He feels that he's got a good shot there, but where does Askew put into this, too, because he's without a ride as well.
Yeah, that's a good. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out for sure.
Yeah, and then you got James Hinchcliffe. He's probably going to be in the 26 car next year. Will Tony Kanaan go over to Ganassi and run the 48 on the oval races, or will Jimmy Johnson? This I think is probably one of the silly seasons where we don't know who everyone's. You know, if somebody doesn't have a deal, nobody knows who's going to be where. Oh, by the way, another name that's been pointed to the 10 team is. Simon Pagenaud. Yes.
He's had a rough go of it for a couple of years, hasn't he?
But he won the 500 last year. He finished third in points. You know, Penske, if you're not Joseph Newgarden, who's else was with Penske? Oh, wait a second. We've got Will Power and Simon Pagenaud. Now we're going to have Scott McLaughlin next year.
Yeah. I mean, they were running three cars for a while. I guess they're going to be up to four next year.
Yeah, they're going to be up to four full-time cars next year, which we have heard that Tim Cindric was happy with three, so we'll see how he fares with four cars next season. It's going to be a fun offseason regardless. I know the Indy cars are on course right now at the Oval at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway prepping for next year's Indianapolis 500. Just a lot going on.
Yep, it's gonna be something to watch for sure.
Now, your series is going to close out the season at Road Atlanta for their final race of the year. They've got Friday and Saturday races with F1600, F2000, Formula Atlantic. I think everybody's there this weekend. You've driven around Road Atlanta. Talk us through it real quick.
It's one of the great American road courses for sure. It's very hilly. There's a lot of up and down. It's a little bit tight, but the back straightaway coming out of 7 going down into 10 A and B, you can let it stretch out. You can get a draft. You can pass easily going into the turn 10 chicane. Turn 1 is super fast uphill, and then it leads into the really blind, really tricky turn 3 that goes down into the S's. So it's a really fun track. It's one of my favorite. I think it's one of the favorites of anybody who drives there. Yeah. I wish I would be able to go and drive on it, but we're staying safe, so I have to do it virtually.
Yeah, that I've driven on it once at slow speed in the pickup truck, and it is a phenomenal road course. I enjoy it. I really do.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Yeah.
So I don't remember if they've announced their schedule yet. I think the only ones to announce their schedule are IndyCar and the Road to Indy. We're waiting on some other series to announce their schedule for next year. I'm hearing some things that there's going to be some interesting tracks in some of the support series. But when those come out, I think that this next season, if everything holds normal, it's going to be an interesting season to come up through the pack. And I think that what we need to do is we need to take one of our December dates, Charlie, and talk about how, if you're interested in going racing open wheel style, how to do it, what's the proper way to do it. You know, we've got plenty of resources. I don't see why we couldn't make a show about it.
Yeah. I have my YouTube channel where I put up my own races, and I've been trying to figure out how to make an episode or a series about how to get into racing. And there's so many ways to do it. And so many different budget levels. It depends how much money you have, like which route to take. So it's a deceptively complex topic, but anybody who watches racing probably wonders, I wonder what that would be like doing this. Mm-hmm. And it may be more accessible than people think. It's an expensive hobby for sure. But, get a Formula V or a Club Ford. You can pick up a Club Ford for like 15 grand and then go racing for like, maybe $500 to $1,000 a weekend. So it's not entirely out of reach, I think, for a lot of people that might think it is. It would be a good episode for sure in the off season.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think it'd be one that parents and, drivers alone would appreciate, because it gives them more of a stepping stone to think about how different steps are. But we'll definitely get circled on that in December. I will say this, next week's show, something that I know you've been looking forward to, Charlie, because we are going to sit down with John Norman. He's the CEO of Evo. And if you have social media, you follow racing on social media, and if you're listening to this, I know you do, so you've seen the ads. It's a new approach to crowdsourcing. I don't know if I'd say crowdsourcing, but if you remember how Justin Wilson paid for his racing coming up in, through Europe and in Champ Car, I think he still did it in IndyCar with buying shares into him. So he was publicly traded on the stock market. That's kind of the idea behind Evo. We'll talk to John Norman. He is the CEO of Evo. He's also the father of Ryan Norman, if you remember from Indy Lights. So we'll talk with him about his involvement with Andretti Autosport. That's a new partnership. We'll go into, we'll talk more about it. It's going to be a really interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to it. Also, we talk up to our F4 FRA champions. I think we're even trying to get our Formula Race Promotions champions on as well. So Linus Lundqvist and Hunter Yaney. We don't have the official champions for Formula Race Productions yet, but when we do, we'll get those on. So it's going to be a busy weekend for a lot of different race series at Road Atlanta, but nonetheless, Charlie, we're going to close out a racing season finally, the racing season that we weren't sure was going to happen to begin with.
Yeah. So to touch on the Evo, I'm not entirely like I've seen the ads on Facebook, and I'm vaguely familiar with the business model. So generally, how it works is that, like you said, you buy shares in an athlete, and so you would say, you know, just for a name off the top of my head, Braden Eves. So you would buy shares in him. And they would use that money to fund his racing. And then when he gets to, you know, to a well-paid seat with Chip Ganassi, then basically the firm garnishes his wages and it pays back the investors. So that's where you get your return.
Garnishes wages.
It's been around for a while. Like you said, Justin Wilson did it. I think that Scott Dixon did it. I know Jensen Button and Kimi Raikkonen used that model to fund their careers. And I'm sure probably a bunch of others. I think Jack Harvey has done it.
That sounds right. Yeah.
So it's not uncommon. For me, I don't really get why anybody would do it, because if somebody came to me and said, "Hey, invest in this race car driver and you'll get your money back when they're rich and famous," I'll be like, "Are you crazy?" So, I mean, I think one question that the first question I would ask him is, how do you mitigate the risk?
Right.
Because it's to bet on any single solitary junior league race car driver on making it is it's a bad bet. I'll say that to put it nicely. But I'm sure that they have ways to do it, because otherwise nobody would invest in it.
If you want to email Charlie, Debbie Downer, it's Debbie Downer at InsideOpenWheel.com. But no, it's going to be an interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to it. And then, you know, we'll wrap up the Formula Race promotion season and get set for our fantastic off season of programs. I already have the first month lined up, so just a little preview of what we're looking at. So next weekend we had the interview with John Norman and our. Hopefully the rest of our SECA Pro Champions. The week after that, Dave Dusick of Racetrack Engineering will be with us. So if you don't know what that's all about, basically, if you've ever watched a Road to Indy race live stream, you've watched some of Dave Dusick's work, and we'll talk more about that later on. Then that next week, we're going to wrap up F4, FRA, FRP, and the week after that, Road to Indy and IndyCar season reviews. So a busy week, and then we get started on our Legends of Open Wheel Racing. So for Charlie Ante, I'm Jeremy Scott. Don't forget next week, a busy week on Inside Open Wheel. Thanks for listening, and most importantly, thanks for following. Take care, everybody.